This episode of How Was Your Run Today was recorded at the WGBH studio in the Boston Public Library, located on the finish line of the Boston Marathon in Copley Square.
Hey, Peter.
Brian, welcome once again to the beautiful GBH studio at the Boston Public Library. How are you today?
Well, I'm looking out at these 15, 20-foot tall floor-to-ceiling windows.
Gorgeous.
Out at Boylston Street, out at the finish line of the Boston Marathon.
Look at it.
It is sunny.
Yes.
The skies are clear. People are walking around with their coats unzipped, if they're even bothering to wear coats at all. All of this is preamble and setting up to this question.
Okay.
Given the weather today, how was your run today?
Thank you for asking, Brian. It was one of the best, without hyperbole, it was one of the best runs I've had during my training of this particular round of marathon training. It was just tight.
Yes.
In all the good ways. Clean.
Yes.
In all the good ways. Brisk. In all the good ways.
Right.
It was only a four. It was nothing. It was nothing.
It
was.
It sounds like.
Yeah. You know,
you got a shirt right at it from the dry cleaners. It was crisp.
That's what I was wearing.
It was bright.
I was wearing
a white Oxford.
I was wearing a white Oxford dress shirt.
Yeah.
On my 4 miles. I soaked it pretty thoroughly with my sweat.
You would.
No, it was great. It was just a beautiful, beautiful run. Everything felt good. And part of that was 2 days off in advance of that because I was feeling a little under the weather. And
you were tired.
My body was tired and it needed a little rest. And there, bam, it went. Tomorrow's an eight. And still, it's kind of a fallback week in my training
schedule. But it's
going
to be pretty nice again tomorrow.
Yeah, in fact, schedule-wise, I have to wait till later in the afternoon to do it, which is always a challenge for me, but I think the temperatures will be on my side. I think I'll be scratching 50 degrees out there. So that's, you know, you run with a light cap, not a winter hat. You run in shorts. You run in a long tech shirt, no jacket. I mean, that kind of stuff, you can't beat that.
Peter, I know you haven't asked.
I'm sorry, what happened?
But that's how I ran today. That
wait
was my ensemble.
Wait, you ran today?
Shorts, long sleeve tech shirt, light running gloves, a light knit cap, which I had to remove those after a mile and a half because I only ran a three today. That was my plan.
Did you run because I was shaming you on the SatStat chat post on Facebook and called you out?
Did you?
Okay, so the answer is no. That didn't,
no,
that didn't
I haven't checked
your
my
decision.
Social media yet today.
I didn't do anything for
you. I don't have that that reflex. I don't need to check it all the time.
Okay, well, some of us are doing things for the show, and some of us are putting some social media up for the show. So, like,
hey, I'm here,
Anna,
right?
Anna Brooks and I
I'm
are
here.
Constantly online, maybe for the show, not to feed
Andrea
our...
Andrea Bonnie-Gould is constantly making original artwork, installations...
That are on view
all over the country.
Exactly right. So your small contribution, I guess, is to show up lazily on a Saturday afternoon and pipe some words into this microphone. Terrific. Terrific.
It's not much, but it's all I can do.
Well, I'm glad you had a three-miler.
Well, I did run a three-miler. Now, look, remember, I'm trying to keep it short.
You need
keep to. Keep it fast.
Yeah.
Kept it under 9-minute pace, which for me, I'm moving toward there.
I've never
swallowed
the urge to swear more than I am.
So I'm
right
under
now.
9-minute pace on those three. Now, of course, friend of the show, Paul Checkle.
Oh, yeah.
He's an avid poster on the social media.
So you saw that one.
I did see his.
He can't miss it.
Ran a 20 sub.
That's the way he said it.
7 pace.
He just threw it out there, too, that it was 20 miles. It was like a 6:40-something pace or something. It was just,
kudos to Paul. Because that is impressive, and it's something I'm never going to do.
Yeah, he owes me a phone, though, because I threw my phone across the room when I read it.
Is that what that's caused you to do that? No, he's crushing it out there. And I'll tell you, we haven't spoken about this.
No, we've not.
Over the last 2 weeks, I have had sort of a... got a 1-2 punch.
Yeah.
Of seeing people I know posting some very fast times.
Doing much better than you.
Well, and that's exactly how
that's
I took
right.
it. I took it personally.
Yes.
I suddenly felt I wasn't doing anything right. I was feeling very old,
not
creaky.
Not a zero-sum game, Brian.
And I'm seeing people posting these times and saying, wow, I'm worthless and weak. And that's what I thought.
And that's fair.
It is. It, well, that's usually the case. That's actually a true depiction of my life and my running style, for sure.
Is.
Worthless and weak, yep. Sort of dragging along,
just barely getting through it.
And then I ran on the treadmill. Out of nowhere, I was sort of just, all right, I'm going to go put in 20 minutes at the gym because I was having like a mental breakdown. Have you ever had this? You get to the gym late, your 45 minutes turns into 20 minutes, and then you look around, you don't know what you're going to do. I had zero plan.
Yeah, it's called gym panic.
So I hopped on an elliptical.
Sure.
Because I thought, well, I'm not going to bang out 3 miles in 20 minutes. So I get on the elliptical for 15 minutes, and I'm like, I can't do this anymore. This is dumb. So what would your natural inclination be to do? Well, you get on the treadmill and run a 7:30 mile because I don't know
just
why.
Just one, though.
Yeah,
just one of those.
For me, super fast mile. I don't know why I did that, but I was proud I did it, and it sort of brought me a little bit out of my funk.
Well, I think I do understand that feeling because something happens whenever I do floor work or machines or something, mm-hmm. and then the thing I do that sort of wraps it all out always tends to be a little treadmill. I hate that.
Do you really?
Yeah. I don't know why that is.
Oh.
But I always fall back to that. So even if I do an elliptical,
yeah.
and then I do a couple free weights, or if I'm only doing core work, or yeah. if I'm doing leg lifts, whatever, something happens at the very end of it where I'll do another mile or two on the treadmill.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
That is fascinating.
Yep. I usually don't lead off with it unless it's my only workout.
Right.
Meaning if I'm there to do the treadmill, then I'm off the whole time.
Well, that's a different thing. Right. So you'll do whatever you are to do, you're there to do, and then yep. feel, well, I'm here, I might as well get in a couple more miles.
Yeah, and usually it's to try to work some speed or tempo thing, yep.
Wow, all right. No, I don't do that. This was totally random, and I think psychologically, what I was doing was I was still sort of on the downslide from the Millinocket Marathon, and let's face it, it's February. There's no reason to go outside if you don't want to, unless you get a great, gorgeous day like this. And I haven't been putting in huge miles or even normal miles for me. And I think it was getting to me.
I'm sure it was.
And I needed to get out and pump it out a little bit.
Well, funny you should say the psychology of it, Brian.
Yes.
Because today's guest is a psychologist. It's Dr. Chris Carter from Spalding Rehabilitation. He is the team psychologist for the Race for Rehab team at Spalding, of which I'm a member.
And now you know why I am on the show, because my segues are killer.
You do set it up nicely. So we're going to go to him in just a second. But before we do, Brian.
Hey, I have a question for you, Peter.
This is good. You almost didn't need a prompt. This is good. Go ahead. Keep follow that thought. Keep going.
Well, let's play a little music first.
Yeah.
That keeps getting more intense.
I think it's evolving every week.
Wow.
If you do a side-by-side.
Apparently, there's 8 weeks left.
There's 8 weeks left. Yes, sir.
Peter, how much do you weigh?
Thank you for asking, Brian. Today's weight is 221.
You've lost 1 pound since the last time I asked you that question.
Since the last time you asked, and a total of 4 pounds since the inception of Clyde Army Countdown. I'm very happy with my progress. And we'll just keep on doing what we're doing.
Again, do you have a goal, or are you just watching what happens?
No, I the only comparison I have, again, is 2 years ago, going to the starting line of the Boston Marathon, I was clocking in around 204.
Okay.
There's no way I'm going to get to that weight. But if anything closer to sub 215, 210, if I could drop another clean 10 pounds, that'd be awesome. I just think it's better for my knees and better for my mind.
10 pounds.
Yeah, but I only have like 8 weeks to do it.
Yeah.
And we all know what happens in the taper. I just eat cake batter
everything
and dough.
Everything goes back.
Yeah.
Everything goes in reverse.
Yeah. And ice cream at every meal, apparently. So we'll see about that. Yeah, I'm feeling very good about that. We'll see how we do on week 7. And I'm dying to hear what the music sounds like then, too. So we'll see, but we'll just keep at it.
Would you
like to go to our interview now, Brian?
Let's talk to Dr. Carter.
Let's go do that. Brian, we're joined today with Dr. Chris Carter. Dr. Carter, thank you so much.
Sure.
Can we call you Dr. Chris?
You can call me whatever you like.
Dr. Chris, tell us why you're here today.
Well, I'm the support psychologist for the Spalding Race for Rehab team.
I know somebody who's running on that team.
I know somebody who's on that team, too, and it's me.
It's got a nice jacket.
I have a nice, I wore my colors today because I'm proud of them. And I'm very excited. I haven't run with the team yet. I'm going to do the 18 and the 21 in the coming weeks.
You really should.
I'm dying to do it.
You really should do it with the team.
Dying to do it.
And you haven't, so you haven't been out to the starting line or been to the finish party afterwards down at the Mandarin?
I've not.
We take good care of you.
Yeah, does that happen each only on the race, or does that happen on those training runs?
No, it doesn't happen on the training runs. But the training runs, we do have food and fuel along
the way.
Which I
need. I need all that.
Yeah, and if you finish up, we on the long runs, if you finish up down the hospital, we have people who can give you massages and work you over. And
why am I not doing this?
I am raising my hand.
I'll tell you, if you're going to go through the pain of training and raising the money, Spalding's the team to do it for.
Well, I'm thankful to be on the team, and I'm doing very well in my fundraising, and everyone's been very generous, and I can't wait.
What is your long run this weekend? Did you already do it?
No, this weekend is just an 8. It's a fallback week for me on my training, but next week's a 14.
Okay. So it starts to get serious next week.
It starts to get serious, yeah. Today was just a 4.
Okay.
Tomorrow will be the 8.
Okay. How many long runs, how many 20 miles are you going to do?
I'm going to do an 18, I think I'm going to do an 18, a 20, and a 21.
Okay.
I think I'm going to do 3.
Okay.
Whereas in our first training session 2 years ago, I think I only did an 18 and a little over a 20. I think I want 3, though. Just for me.
Yep.
So, Dr. Carter, I don't know a lot of other teams that have a team psychologist on the team for running.
I don't think there is another.
So
that is one of the unique features that we have.
How did you come to be part of the marathon team?
Well, I'm an alumni of the team. I ran for Spalding 2 years, two different times. And then when the bombs went off, Spalding was very involved with that. One of them went off. We have our viewing station down at the Mandarin Hotel, and one of the bombs went off right across the street. So we were getting people back at the hospital that afternoon who had been traumatized by the event, and we were doing a triage with them right from the start of the hospital. And then, of course, we had all of the survivors came to us, and we're taking care of everybody who lost a limb, was treated with us. I think it was a total of about 35 patients over that time. And then when it came for the following year, there were a lot of people who were experiencing a lot of anxiety and anticipation of it. Some of our support team, our runners, we had a number of people who either had finished around the time of the bombs went off. We had others that weren't able to finish because the bombs went off and they closed the race, of course. So there was a tremendous amount of symbolism attached to the race, and it was a much more emotional experience and activity than typical. So we were doing a lot more. The hospital and the fundraising team asked if I would participate in some of that, because we'd done a lot of triage work and support work, mental health work with our staff and with families over the course of that year. In anticipation of that, talking with the runners themselves, we were getting these themes and hearing about people's concerns. And so we folded that in over the course of the year. I went out to the start line and did some work with people at the start line, and then we had a couple of people who were available at the finish line at the Mandarin for viewing, in part for the support team that was there and for the families of people who were there and the runners themselves, just to make sure that everybody was going to be okay in the training, in the run, and afterwards. And it was well received, and they asked me if I would do it again for the subsequent year, so I've been doing it ever since then.
And since then, have you noticed a shift from people who are still working through the trauma of the bombing and running in subsequent years, or what you might consider more typical running psychology that you're dealing with?
Well, it's funny. Mostly it's been the running psychology part of it. I mean, how do you keep your mind focused? How do you avoid hitting the wall and getting knocked down by the wall and work your way through that? You know, the running a marathon is exhausting. It's painful. You can easily talk yourself out of it. You have your goals and objectives, and there comes a point where you either are going to push into your objectives, you're going to back off and be disappointed in the rest of that. So there we're focusing on a good amount of that, but I was surprised at the last workshop that we did. I had one of our runners came up and was talking to me about how she had been a spectator during the bombing. And this is her first time coming back. She hasn't been back to the finish line. She hasn't been back to Boylston Street since then.
Sure.
And she's decided that she's running for us and raising money. And was just talking about that sense of closure and bringing up memories and that sort of thing. So even though it's not the main focus, it's one of those things that I think is going to always inform the race.
Yes.
That there's always going to be themes and elements of that all the way through.
Well, I'll just give a quick personal story. When I ran 2 years ago, which was my so far first and only Boston Marathon, I tried not to think about it all that much. And then turning down Hereford and turning onto Boylston, yep. It's completely flooded my mind. I was, of course, exhausted,
yep.
And emotional because this was my first Boston. Seeing all the people out there, I was angry. I was upset. I didn't know what was happening to me. Both the race and the thought of what happened here just flooded me with emotions. Yep. And by the time I finished, I was a wreck, as probably I would have been in any marathon, but this one especially. And
yep.
I assume that's a pretty common occurrence with your runners.
Yeah, well, the runners who run for us, of course, you know, they're raising money, and they typically have a personal connection to the hospital, either a family member or someone they've known, a friend. We've had former patients who have been able to run for us, and so there's that helps to motivate them and drive them down the finish line. And then when they get to that point, there is all of that emotional charge that they've done it. Anytime, particularly for the first-time runners, I mean, this is a huge thing that people underappreciate what it takes to get to the starting line.
Mm-hmm.
But then it all comes down to that one day, those 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours out on the course, where you're really testing yourself, you're questioning yourself, you're pushing yourself to do something you've never done before. Because even though you've run several hundred miles by the time you get to the start line, you probably never run 26.2. And
right.
So that's a personal record for you. And you've had to really, I think, examine, chase away, deal with your own demons. And so there's all of that. Emotionally, you're exhausted. Your sugars are down.
Right.
You know, your brain is fried. Your legs are completely toast at that point, and your defenses are down. So emotionally, all of that stuff's just going to come out.
Can we get into that a little bit? I've been experiencing a thing, especially on this cycle of training, and I felt it the first time through too, where I'm now at a place, and I guess I am seven, eight weeks into my training, I'm extremely emotional all the time, and not just like cry sad or haha crazy happy. I'm feeling all emotions very quick,
uh-huh.
very fully.
Yeah.
And I swear, is it from the running?
Well, it's the combination, the running along with everything else.
Yeah.
You were talking to me about all of the other stuff you've got going on in your life.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Have you increased your sleep at the same time you've increased your miles?
Yeah, because it's willing itself upon me. I can't really stop it. Yeah,
right.
I'm trying to add a full hour. And sometimes I can do it and sometimes I can't.
Yeah, and that's one of the things they recommend, that as you get up into this mileage range, that you should be adding 15, 20 minutes, maybe an hour a night to increase, to replace, because you're depleting your body. And
yes.
Because of the pace of the training, your body really doesn't have a lot of time to recover and recuperate. So you've got all of that stuff that goes on emotionally. And the training itself is a stressor. It's that sort of yin and yang, the dichotomy of marathon running. Running's supposed to relieve your stress, but preparing for something like this adds to it because you're focused. I've got to get my miles in.
Yeah, you're looking at the schedule.
I've got to build my day around that run. If you don't get it in when you're supposed to, can I catch up? Can I make it up? Can I fit the extra piece in?
Yep.
So it's something that's sort of constantly wearing away at you.
Absolutely.
In the midst of all that.
Absolutely.
And it's never a distance you can just go out and do. You know, even no matter how fit you are, you have to train for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think experience helps with that, but your body's always changing.
Right.
We're always getting older.
Yeah.
You wind up with some minor injury here or there, or some life event that slows you down for a couple of weeks, or a cold.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find people coming to you with those sort of very frustrated that they're not going to reach the finish line because they haven't put their miles in and things are, they're stressed about that?
Well, I think those are the things that begin to come up towards the end.
Okay.
And people will start to see if they can make up for what they missed during the taper weeks.
Mm.
You know, by that point, really, it's too late. You know, whatever you've got in the box, that's what you're going to carry with you.
Yep.
You can't stuff it in at the end. And in fact, you risk more by trying to stretch it out rather than allowing your body to recuperate and rest during that taper. And you'll end up doing worse than if you just said, you know what, it is what it is, and I'm gonna hydrate, I'm gonna rest, I'm gonna let my body recover, do some extra stretching along the way to really allow all of that damage to repair, because you do get to the end of the training and your body's pretty beat up by that point. Because most of us are not professional athletes.
Absolutely. And I noticed just with this, my run today, it was a small 4 miler, but it was phenomenal. And it was so good because I just took 2 rest days in a row off, which I usually don't do. I only take one. But I just was feeling a little under the weather. Maybe a cold was coming on. Maybe it wasn't.
Yep.
And I thought, it's not worth it. I'm just going to hold off. Wait till the temperature comes up into the 40s. And today's was like, it was angelic. It was perfect. It was exactly the kind of run I always want every run to be.
Right.
Which they absolutely are not.
Right.
But, it reinforced that idea of you have to listen to yourself. You have to hear it. Your body is going to tell you exactly what to do. And it's really the magic of the taper, too. The taper is this thing we always sort of are wary of because it's so crazy. I get so nuts.
Yep.
And maybe we should get into that idea of the taper trap.
Yeah, why do we go crazy during the taper?
Because we do. We absolutely do.
It's kids at Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, this is what you've been looking forward to.
Right.
You've been building up to it. If you're doing the fundraising, you've got your money typically taken care of, so that stress is off.
Yep.
At that point, you're in the best shape that you've been in probably in
maybe
a long
ever.
Time. Yep. And so you're running like you've never run before, and you're not allowed to run the long distances anymore. So you want to really go further than you should. And it's like the racehorse sort of chopping at the bit at that point.
Because it happens. I definitely felt myself rattling around in my own skull a week and a half beforehand. And really, 2 days before, the Saturday before, I was out of my mind. I got a little better Sunday because I had to start focusing on, hey, start hydrating, start getting ready.
Yep.
But 2 days out, you just sort of watching the clock. You're waiting.
Well, the big thing is the best day to go to the expo is that Friday or Saturday.
Yeah,
right.
And because you get the excitement and all the other runners. And
everybody else is going through the same thing.
And there are shiny distractions.
The city is packed and everybody with their gear on and all the rest of that. And you're really getting the feel of, so this is what this is all about. But then you stay away on Sunday. Don't get out of bed.
Don't talk to anybody.
Do Netflix binging on that Sunday.
Keep the family at bay.
Yep.
Yeah, it really, oh yeah, oof. Tell me about tricks of the trade after a race. I do a lot of theater shows and things like that, and there's always that depression that hits after your show closes. I noticed it was very similar after the marathon was said and done and my body wasn't in pain after the first day or two. I really fell into sort of the doldrums of a post-race. What can we do about that?
Well, I think it helps to know that that's what's coming and to acknowledge that and allow the space for it and to prepare yourself for it. It's a surprise for people because I've just accomplished this tremendous thing. I'm feeling tired, but feeling like I've accomplished my goals, hopefully, within all of that. And so now what?
Right.
One of the things that helped me, especially when I ran Boston, because I was also fundraising, was that I took that time the next two or three days to sort of write another thank you to everybody who had supported me and given to the charity that I was running for, write a little race report for all of them. And whether anybody read it or not, it really didn't make a difference. Yep. It gave me something to do and to continue to sort of revel in my own happiness about what I had accomplished, even though I could barely walk.
Yeah,
right. Right. Stairs were not any fun at that point. No.
But it puts you back in that humble place, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that's helpful, I think, to keep in perspective. And
well, I think it's worthwhile to set aside that time to clean up all the stuff you've been neglecting for the last 3 or 4 months.
That's
all the people
true.
You haven't been seeing, all those tasks around the house.
I haven't done laundry in 6 weeks.
Put the running shoes away and just get out of the running world and just focus on the rest of life that has been on hold,
right?
Particularly during those last weeks of training.
It is a lot. Let's deep dive now. Okay, actual long distance running. Here we go.
Yep.
I go crazy during the run. I experience highs and lows within seconds of each other, typically after miles like 15, 16, anything past that. I can be feeling the best I've ever felt and saying, oh, of course, this is excellent.
Right.
And it seems like within minutes, I am contemplating reality and why am I here and why am I putting myself through this? And if I wait it out, it swings back. What's going on in my chemistry?
How many miles have you been running?
Only now.
Was the last time that you ate?
Oh, interesting. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I try to do the goos on the long runs every 40 minutes.
Yeah, but that's only
a little hit.
A little hit
to
keep you from depleting completely. And it's enough to, you can feel that little bit of burst, but you know, it's a downhill, particularly if you're a more recreational runner. So now that 15 miles is coming at 2 hours, 2.5 hours since you've had anything to eat. And if you're at the marathon, you didn't eat for an hour before you got into the
corral,
start gate.
Yeah. Maybe more. Yep. Maybe more, yeah.
Yep.
That was the thing about race day that was the most amazing to me was the, I met my team here in Copley.
Uh-huh.
We bussed out at, 5:36 in the morning.
Yeah.
We got into the, near the starting line where we were housed, I don't know, by 7:30. And then you just sort of hang for 4 hours.
You spend
more
time waiting than you do running.
Yeah.
And it's something you haven't prepared for.
Right.
Because you've usually been in your house or with your team, and you've had this sort of ritual warm-up, and you know when you're going to show up there, so you eat however long beforehand, and you're hydrated.
Yeah.
And marathon day or race day is completely different.
Yep. Completely different.
Yep.
And it's hours later. Your long run's happening hours later in your clock than it had been on the previous weekends.
Well, and we recommend that, particularly those really long runs, that you think about what that timing is going to be. One of our team runs is going to be late in the day, so that it's going
to
mimic more
the
actual starting time. And people should be thinking about eating in a similar fashion in preparation for that. Because usually, I mean, if you're like me, a half hour before you run, you have something in there, you have some oatmeal or something that's going to settle and stay with you, and then you go.
Yeah.
And by the time you're finishing, you're kind of
out
at that point. But then you go back and you can eat.
Yeah. Right. That's right.
Within that, but those long runs, and,
tough,
you know, the stress hormones that are being dumped in your body at 15 miles, 16 miles of that repetitive activity. With that, I mean the one of the downsides of the Boston Marathon is they talk about the heartbreak hills, but you've got a good 20 miles of downhill, rolling hills, but you're activating and putting stress on the same muscle groups for the most part, and then you get a little relief with the hills, and then you're going
and you're back to it.
You're back
and actually, that's
to,
where I had my
downhill.
Toughest. Brookline is where I had my toughest time coming through Coolidge Corner.
Yep. Those last 6 miles were brutal.
They're tough.
They're really
Cleveland
hard.
Circle till about almost the end.
They're very long. Yeah. They're very, especially the last, like, boy, coming through Kenmore Square, and after that, it's still a lot. It's still,
you think you're almost there. You can watch that Sitco sign for a long time.
For a long time.
Before you actually get
there.
And
why is there a hill at Hereford? Why would you do that?
Well, you like you go underneath the
I do like that. That's fun.
Mass Ave, and then you come back
up
again.
Come back out.
Yep.
It's a little brutal.
Have you worked with folks who are either recreational runners or even elite athletes who sustain some sort of an injury and then are told, like most of us at some point in our running life, don't run?
Do something else.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea of don't run shouldn't be don't be active. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you get hold of a rowing machine, and can you erg? Can you get into a swimming pool? Can you get onto an elliptical? I mean, usually the advice is because you've got one muscle group that's been overworked, but what can you do other things for the rest of the group? If you're doing those long distance runs, you get addicted to the endorphins.
Right.
Yep. And if you have that absence, is there a way that you can replace that and find those instead? Can you be part of the support team for your running group and mm-hmm. bring the water and the goo out for them so that you can continue and maintain that connection within all of that?
And why do we go back to it? You know, running is hard. And it can be very, very hard, and it can be unpleasant. We often talk about how unpleasant a run is, or parts of it, or struggling to get out of bed early in the morning on a day that's sleeting and 40 degrees. And for some reason, we go out and run 7 miles. We always say that we only regret the runs we don't do, but that
exactly.
doesn't necessarily mean that we love it while we're doing it. And yet, we somehow have the short-term memory loss and go out and do it again. Is it all endorphins?
What's the need? What's the spark? Why does it happen?
Or is it different for everybody?
Well, I think it's probably different for everybody because not everybody goes back to running. We have plenty of people who have the
one time it.
It's one and done, and that's they don't run anymore, or they go back to short distances if they mm-hmm. do it at all with that. Part of it, I think, is the neurochemistry that you get addicted to. I think part of it is just the well-being that happens. Running is really cheap and easy. You don't have to have extra equipment. You can do it anywhere, anytime.
Yep.
You can squeeze a run in ways that you can't do in other things. I've been picking up rowing as an mm-hmm. alternative because my knees couldn't take the abuse anymore mm-hmm. For a while. Although I'm back. I'm doing the running again. And getting my miles back up. But if I want to row, I've got to have a group of other people to do it. There's certain times when I can do it. I've got an erg machine at home that I can jump on, but I can't do that at work or after work. And just the outdoors. There's some interesting research that identifies that people who exercise outside, sort of in the natural gym, receive better mental health benefits than people who exercise in the gym. There's just something about being outdoors, getting the fresh air, being in amongst nature that is an additional draw that running, you know, clearly provides you. And then there's the camaraderie and the people that you run with and you're out with, other fit people who usually are in good shape.
See, that ticks me off. Everybody else makes me angry. Is there a psychological reason for that?
We should probably talk more.
Yeah, I feel like we need a private session. Right, Brian, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to book another session without you.
That's all right. Bring your insurance card next week.
Well, it's part of the team, so...
It's an added bonus.
It's one of the services that we provide.
Well, I connect with that running outside idea that gives me far more benefit. You know, with 3 miles on the treadmill, I sort of say, okay, well, I got my miles in, I sweat, and I got it done. Any amount of time outside, I really appreciate, I think. And I'm more excited about it. And it doesn't have to be out in the woods or on a mountaintop or anywhere else. It can be, you know, in the middle of a city I've never been in where maybe I don't even see any trees.
That's the best way to see a city. But you know, you think about how much of our lives now are spent indoors.
That's true.
And you get up in the morning, you get in your car, you get out of your car, you walk a short distance into the office, and then you're in till the end of the day. You get back in your car, short distance, and you're barely outside at all. And I think we just do better when we have contact with the outside world. You know, when our new hospital was built, there was a lot of focus on bringing the outside space into the building. So all of the rooms have almost floor-to-ceiling windows. Yeah. We have a big gym that has a huge ceiling so that you can look out at the harbor, the windows, so you look out at the harbor and watch the ships go by and just the changing seasons and all the rest of that, because there's a lot of good evidence to indicate that that kind of exposure just does us more good from a mental health perspective. So being able to get out is just that added bonus.
Many of our listeners are qualifiers for marathons. Many are not. Many do just what I'm doing, which is charity team runs. So I know a big concern is fundraising, and I know a large aspect of what you deal with are people's concerns around fundraising.
Yep.
Any advice about lowering that stress?
Well, I think that what really helps is having a good cause that you're raising the money
for. Sure,
And that, you know, what we tell our folks is that when you're asking, you're not asking for you, you're asking for the hospital.
Of course, yeah.
And when people are saying no, it's not to you, it's for a whole variety of reasons. It's not the right time, the right season, and that sort of thing. So I think finding ways of playing around with it. I mean, most of us are not comfortable talking about money in general.
Yeah. Asking
for money. It reminds us of when we were kids and asking our parents and the strings attached to that and all the rest of that, and or to put somebody in an uncomfortable position of potentially saying, I can't afford it.
Right.
I can't do that. I'd love to, but can't. So we back off from that and we don't do it as much. So there are ways that you can play with it. You know, people do evenings. We're going to host a music night at our house for one of the runners and invite people in and make it fun along with that and get people in the spirit of what you're doing and why you're doing it. You know, talk about your connections with your charity group, and if you've got a personal connection or there's a story that you can tell or pictures that you can show, you know, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. And people are more generous than you think, and you're going to get more people saying yes. You know, I always exceeded my fundraising goals over the years with that. I never had any trouble making the final number.
Do you find that people come at you with questions about scheduling and their lives and how their lives get upended by training or the lives of those around them?
They probably should more, because I think that's an under-recognized stressor there. We try to talk to people at the beginning about when you're signing on to do this training, don't sign on for anything else.
Right.
I should have listened to that, Brian.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you might have missed that night.
I missed the
presentation.
Sorry about that.
But you know, be careful about taking on extra commitments with work or socially, those kinds of things, because it takes up a tremendous amount of time. I mean, your weekends are blown.
Totally gone.
Yeah.
And because everything is dictated around the tent pole run of a whatever distance,
and then the couch.
Yeah, and then the couch.
Particularly as you're getting into those higher miles, the 15 to 20.
Or higher years.
Yep. Those two. Yep. Yeah, we don't bounce back as easily as we did when we were 20.
No way.
I wonder how our lives would have been different if we had become runners in our 20s, actually. I don't know. That's a funny hypothetical to think about.
Well, the kind of level of runner that we are, I feel I'm more fit for it at the age I am now. I don't think I would have been a good fit in my 20s.
When did you guys become serious about your running?
Me in my late 30s.
Uh-huh.
And me about 3 years ago, give or take. I'd always done
a
little bit.
He dodged the number.
Was that how old I was? Oh, I was 42?
Yeah.
Ish?
42, 43?
I didn't start running marathons until I was pushing 50.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But were you doing any kind of distance before that?
I was barely doing any running. I had just started working at Spalding, and I was seeing a lot of people who were lifestyle casualties, strokes and heart attacks and that sort of thing, because they were inactive and they were overweight and they weren't getting any exercise. And I didn't have any marathoners coming onto my... Well, that's not true. We've had people who have been very fit, but those are the unusual ones.
Yeah,
it's
right.
More typically smoking,
heart disease,
those kinds of things. And I was fine. I was having trouble getting up and down the stairs. I was getting winded and started really experienced a lot of anxiety about my fitness and health and the potential for having a stroke and that sort of thing.
Sure, so I said,
I'm getting close to 50. I want to run a marathon. I was at Spalding, so we had the inspiration. I didn't run for them at first. I did Chicago a couple of times before doing the Spalding team and doing Boston.
So how many marathons have you run?
Done 7.
Oh.
Altogether.
That's a lot.
But when was the last one?
2010. was the last one.
Will there be another one?
I don't know. I had to stop because my knees got really bad, but yeah. Then I was working with some people at Spalding who were able to fix the problem.
Yeah.
And I'm picking my miles up again. I signed up for the medley for this year.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm going to do the 5, the 10, and then the half in the fall and see
That's
what
great.
It feels like.
I did that last year, the 5 and the 10, and then I had to bow out of the half
because
of my Achilles tendonitis.
Miserable day.
It was a miserable day. I was so glad I wasn't running it, and I'm so glad I picked up my shirt because
nice
it's one of the nicest shirts I own, and I feel awful that I have the swag and didn't run it.
Oh, you can't wear it.
Well, I do, but I cover it with other things. But it is a really good shirt.
So you started running marathons, or you started running to run a marathon?
Right.
Okay.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And then you ran 7.
Yeah.
So did you start running multiple marathons in a year?
There were 2 years where I ran 2.
So it sounds like you caught the bug once you really got into it.
Yep.
How did the period happen where you realized that you could no longer run because of your knees? It wasn't just one day you said, oh, my knees hurt, I can't do it.
Well, the times,
what was that experience
times were getting
like?
Slower.
Yeah.
And I couldn't, it was at a point where when I was getting to the starting line, I was always sore.
Right.
And so the of course, the runs themselves, the races themselves were, the marathon was how much can I tolerate with that? And then afterwards, it got to the point where my knees were just locking up, and I literally couldn't run anymore. And I had to stop altogether with that.
Well, actually, that's a good question I was thinking about earlier, which is the mental aspect of pushing through, particularly a marathon, but any long, long-distance race that you've set for yourself. You have to have strategies around the moments where you start to feel the failure coming on, the mental failure, the fatigue. But when your body starts to fail you from a very physical place, when do you know? I mean, how do you know? Well, all my tricks are out. I can't will this ankle to do what I want
it takes
to
a
do.
While.
Right? Right.
It's a process.
Right. And I think it's often afterwards that you say, you know, I probably shouldn't have done that.
Should have done that.
Yeah, with it. And you learn from there. But, I mean, I think that this is part of what the long distance training begins to involve, and where you, if you have access to a good running physical therapist or doctor physiatrist who understands running, that can help you to distinguish between what's sore and what's damaged.
Damaged, yeah.
Where you know you can slow down, your back off, or you do some stretching or ice or that sort of
you
thing.
Change a certain
right.
gait aspect
right.
or step aspect.
Versus this is going to really catch up with you and do you some more serious harm. You begin to understand or distinguish between those. I think often when you're out there, you do know when you're supposed to stop. But you've just spent 18 weeks getting to this
point.
Well,
that's the thing.
You know, the goal is, okay, if I can't hit my time, at least finish. And, you know, I've walked as much as I've run in some courses just because I'm not going to DNF on those.
Well, dropping out of Children's is one of the, I was running for Children's for New York. I was going to, and my injury made me lose the half of the medley, and then right after that, New York.
Yeah.
That was, for me psychologically, one of the hardest things I had to decide.
Yeah.
That I wasn't even going to try it.
Right.
And it was brutal.
Yeah.
And then I did myself in by watching it on TV. Like, well, no, it just was awful. It was like a gorgeous day in New York. And everyone...
I think those are some of the harder aftermaths. I mean, the people I've sat and talked with where their bodies betrayed them, they're second guessing if I had trained differently, started earlier, slept better, you know, what other things could I have done with that? And they really put a lot into getting across the finish line, and then when they can't, there's a lot of personal disappointment, and it takes a while to get over that. And sometimes that can be a barrier to doing further races. Some of the repeat runners that we've had where I've sat and talked with them is their last marathon was a disappointment or something happened that kept them from getting to that finish line, and they're worried that it's going to happen again.
Yeah.
And they start to experience some of those same symptoms or some of those same feelings out on the long run, and it really starts to mess with their mental focus.
Well, I have to say, how lucky are these runners to have access to you and other runners who have access to medical professionals who understand running, or even runners themselves? One of the things that draws a lot of people, I think, to running is, in some ways, yes, you can do it anywhere and it's fairly cheap, but it's also can be a very individual activity and sport. So you have people, you know, I'm not going to throw around the term loner loosely, but someone who likes to engage in activity by themselves.
Yeah.
Sometimes we do it just to be with our own minds or be away, get away from our own minds. But it can also be a big group activity. And one of the things I've learned from doing this show, actually, is how little I know about running. And, you know, we always say, listen to your body, but what is it telling me?
Right.
And I'm not a professional athlete, so I can't just turn and go to a doctor or a psychologist or a running guru and say, what's happening? Now, we do have more access because we've met so many wonderful people. And Boston is such a hub of this, of running and sports and medicine combined. It's really a great place to do it. But I've lived here for a very long time, and I ran for years and years and years not knowing when I should stop or what I was doing wrong. And all that is to say is, really, to back up what you said, encourage people to ask other runners, ask their doctor. If their doctor doesn't know anything about running, maybe find another doctor.
Find another doctor. The first doctors who looked at my knee said, you're getting old and you've got arthritis, find something else to do.
Right.
And then I went to one of our physiatry experts who specializes in running. His wife is one of our coaches, and he's running for the team, Adam 1040. And he said, okay, so you're an older athlete and you want to keep running, let's figure out how to make it help you do that.
What a different approach.
Entirely different approach. Yeah. So hooked me up with some good physical therapy, got some injections in my knees, and I haven't had any problems since then.
And I think we have to honor ourselves by using that term and say we're athletes, no matter where we are in our journey.
If you're doing it on a regular basis, you know, the only difference between a professional athlete and the amateur athlete is one gets paid and probably spends more time at it. But the dynamics, the rewards, the what it takes to do your best is the same. The things that get in the way of the professional athletes from really excelling are the same things that get in the way for any of us who are running. You know, it's that whole, how do I talk myself into doing the right thing instead of pulling away, sowing doubt? How do I maintain a sense of confidence that I can do this and face the fears and the doubts and the anxiety about my performance and just get out of the way and do your run and have a good time and excel?
I have one very important question. How do I wrap my mind around the idea that I'm not going to win the Boston Marathon? Because I think I'm supposed to embrace that notion that it's not going to happen. Brian,
You were probably born in the wrong country for that.
Right.
And you don't have quite the right
frame,
body type.
The frame, yeah. It's a little different.
Right.
Okay, so once I can embrace that, do you think I'll be a happier person?
Why not go for it?
Oh, okay.
That's right.
I he thinks I have a chance. The doctor says I have a chance, Brian. That's what I just heard. Did I hear that?
I'm rarely left speechless.
Have you checked out your age category?
Well, you know what? We joke about that from the beginning of the show, which is if I can just keep my 940-ish pace.
Right. You'll qualify.
By 75, I'm going to be in.
That's right.
I don't have to be on a team. I can just waltz in.
And you can be probably one of the top three if you just get to the starting line.
If I just keep going.
Right.
If you can just keep running till you're 95.
Right.
Hey, don't think that's not a goal.
And pick other races other than Boston, because for some reason all the 95-year-olds keep coming here to run as fast as they can. But very, very seriously that, actually, and I've gone through this a lot, which is focusing on a finishing time or a goal time.
Yep.
And the marathon especially is a special case because it's so long. You know well in advance whether you're on your goal time or there's no way you're going to do it.
Right.
But for half marathons and 10Ks and even a 5K, you might have a chance of hitting that PR, you know, even close toward the end.
Right.
But that has sabotaged me many times and, in fact, has caused me to get injured and suffered through injury unnecessarily. So how do you advise people in you know, I'll jump the gun and say backing away from being so focused on that PR, that goal time, but you know, how do you replace that desire to achieve that?
It's a kind of a fine line, because you want to have a certain amount of stress that gives you the optimal level of performance so that you maybe can hit that PR after all your
You need
training.
Something to push yourself really,
yep.
really hard.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. But not push yourself so hard that you do damage and you ignore the signals that are saying that hamstring is seizing up on you, or you know, whatever it happens to be, and you end up doing the kind of damage that now means you can't run
right.
for a much longer period of time. We talk with people about having a stretch goal, that if you're feeling really, really good, you know, maybe it is going to be a PR this time, and then you have goals beyond that. I'd be happy with goal, mm-hmm. then sort of I would settle for this, and bottom line, you know, I got to the point where my bottom line is, as long as I don't end up in the medical tent,
right.
I've had a good run.
Right. right.
I've had a good race.
Right.
Yeah.
With that.
Well, I think we can stage it out. Yeah. I go from, I want to finish.
Yep.
That'd be terrific.
Right.
I want to finish under 5.
Right.
That'd be terrific.
Have you set goals for this Boston
Not
Marathon?
This, it's really interesting. I haven't yet because I'm coming off my injury. And I'm always assessing, like even today on 4 miles, I'm assessing, like, how does my Achilles feel? How does my post-tib feel today? I'm so far okay, but I have to be really mindful and really guarded and stay on the stretching and stay on the hydration and stay on the sleep and try. And I'm sort of just waiting for the betrayal, but it hasn't happened yet, so I'm just going to keep going with it. But
there's time.
We've got about 8 weeks, right?
Well, one of the questions I have for you is it okay 2 days before the race to decide, no, you know what, I don't have any goals for this. I actually want to go and enjoy it.
Well, if it's your first Boston, if you get to the starting line and you're not in pain,
you've done a lot.
You've done a huge amount.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
many people, you've already run farther than the average runner has get to that starting point. And if you are arriving relatively ache and pain free, you're doing better than most of the competition within that. And if it's your first time, just enjoy it. This is going to be the most spectacular thing. You have no idea what you've gotten yourself in for. No matter what other running you've done, if this is your first marathon and Boston's your first, this is a run like no other that you're going
to
have.
Welcome to the circus.
And that's certainly how we took it 2 years ago when we did it. I mean, it was just phenomenal to be a part of it and to do it. The weather was horrible. All it did was blow hard wind and rain at us.
Mm-hmm.
And it was awesome to finish.
It
was awesome to be done.
Yep.
But this time, I'm of mixed emotions. I either want to beat my time.
Yep.
Because you're only racing you.
Right.
There may be tens of thousands of people around you, but you're only racing you.
Right.
Or I'm going to give up that goal because I've not been happy with my per minute times. It's 2 years later.
Yep.
Things are a little bit different. I'm coming off something, and it's like
a little older.
I don't know if I'm a little older. I really am a little mm-hmm. older, and I don't know if I can even be within a few minutes of where I was. So now, if that's true, if I really know that, do I switch it up entirely and just go and actually look at all the people who are out there? Like, I don't think I really noticed the race,
right?
Because
right.
I was so right. determined right. to finish the race,
right,
and not die during the race.
Yep.
I watched someone collapse at Coolidge Corner and get taken out yards in front of me. And I thought, any second, that could be me if I don't do this right.
Yep.
And I'm so thankful for every step.
The two marathons I think I enjoyed the most was, I never enjoyed Boston. It's a tough course.
It's a tough course.
I'm glad that I did them. I don't regret them, but I wouldn't put them on my list of the ones I really had fun with.
Okay.
The two that I really enjoyed, one year was in Chicago, and it hit 100 degrees on the course.
Oh, my goodness.
They were closing the course behind me because they were running out of water. And so I knew when we started, when it was already 75 degrees, that this was going to be too hot, and I don't want to die on the course. And that was my goal, was to finish and not end up in the medical tent.
To beat the closing vehicles as they were coming behind
me. As they were coming up behind me. So I just enjoyed the race and ran what I would run for a while and then get some water.
Sure.
And then the other was my last one, was the Marine Corps. And there I had no particular goals. I just wanted to finish. My knees were kind of giving out on me at that point, so I knew I wasn't going to be able to run the whole thing. So I deliberately would get to the next water station, I'd walk a little bit, and then I'd run, and I played around with however I was feeling at the moment in terms of my running, and finished feeling pretty good and had really enjoyed the course, because it's a spectacular run to do. You've got all the monuments, and it's just a very patriotic crowd that you're there with and all the rest of that. So to really be able to take in the experience, particularly, you know, at our level, I mean, if you're not having fun with the marathon, why are you doing it?
Yeah, why are you doing it?
I don't know.
Well, Peter, I have to say, I ran my Boston. It was my first, and I thought my only marathon I would ever run. This was sort of a life goal.
Yeah.
And as I was doing it, of course, I was trying to hit a time. And I said, well, if I don't beat 4 hours, I'm never going to beat 4 hours because I'm never going to do this again.
Right.
And I got over it, quickly, because it was hard. By the time I got the last 3 miles, I said, anybody who ever runs a marathon is my hero, because this is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life physically.
It's hard.
It's really hard. And then I did wind up running another one, and I'm going to run another one this year. Hopefully I'll still be healthy and be able to do that. But having done those, now I realize, this may or may not be my last marathon. And I also, there are other distances. And, you know, so I think I can come at it with a totally different mindset. So I don't know if that's helpful for you to think about.
I don't know. I think I'm trapped in my own brain. And I'm worried. And I'm cautious. And I'm nervous. And then I'm cavalier about it. It depends on the day.
Right.
And it depends on where I am in the training. I'm more comfortable now than I have been, but it took halfway to get in.
Well, remember, you started from zero.
I did.
The last
time we
trained for a long time for a half marathon and then decided to do the full one
and then
went right
into, the full
right into that. So you've been training for months and months.
Much
and
stronger
here you're
baseline.
Coming from 3 or 4 months of
nothing
because
really
you were injured to marathon training. That's the hardest thing you could possibly do, go from zero to a 16-week training program.
And probably not wise.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I question it.
I think mentally, emotionally, you needed to do something like that.
I needed to shake it up.
I know 20-year-olds who can do that, who are in reasonably good shape as a baseline.
Right.
But you get to a certain point in your life, and really, then, I mean, at this point, when I go out for a run, it's with a sense of a little bit of curiosity and adventure.
How will this be?
Exactly. How am I going to do? What's this going to feel like? How far am I going to get? And I allow it to be whatever it's going to be at that point. And on the day of the marathon, when we're out at Hopkinton, that's what we talk with a lot of the runners about, that you've done your training, the run today is going to be what it's going to be.
Right.
And just listen to it, relax, don't stress about it, and pay attention. If it's going to be a good run, enjoy it. If it's not such a good run, get through it. We'll be waiting for you at the other end.
And that's right.
We've got massage tables and great food, and Sam Adams brings down a couple of cases of their 26.2 beer. And
all right. Well, this is starting to sound
pretty
good.
Peter, I think you might want to finish this race.
I'm going to finish this race, Brian.
I have maybe one last question, which is, do you have a favorite route that you love running?
The course that I used to do, my parents have a place up in rural Quebec, just on the other side of the Vermont border. And so there's a loop that's about 15 to 16 miles that's sort of rolling hills. And, I mean, really some tough hills. They're several miles long up and down. But you're out in pastoral country, going past farms, and you've got the mountains, and there's a big lake nearby, and all the rest of that. And I've always enjoyed that, and that was always a reward for getting strong enough to be able to do that, because you have to be in good shape to be able to do that.
That's excellent. Well, now, will you be available on the long runs for the 18 and the 21?
I'll be out at the water stations and
reachable by cell phone for emergencies.
Can I text you as I'm approaching, and perhaps you can make a little extra room for me?
We can do
in
a little
time.
Pit stop and have a chat.
This is good for me, Brian. This is what I need.
A couch on wheels, I think, is what you need, Peter.
Well, I need that for everything else too. That's not just my mind. Doctor, thank you so much for making time today.
That was my pleasure.
And we'd love to have you back sometime after the race and talk about maybe the things I did and didn't do.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
I imagine I'm going to make some mistakes, Brian. What do you think?
Let's hope so, because you can only grow. from your mistakes.
I'm trying to grow, Brian. Thank you, Doctor.
Yep.
Thanks.
Good.
Peter, that was really fascinating talking to Dr. Carter. And how great for you and the other folks running for the Spalding Race for Rehab team to have access to him and the other professionals.
It's an unbelievable perk of being part of that team.
It's like being an elite runner.
Yeah, I
welcome to elite running, Peter.
I don't know about that,
yes.
But I know that I need that kind of help.
Well, we've known that for a long time. This show is not enough. You know, you've cajoled me into doing this podcast for well over a year now.
Yeah, I've gotten free, like 66.
I don't think either of us are any healthier.
I got 66 free sessions with you. I had to bring in a real professional, one number 67.
Can you pay for my parking today?
I don't validate, so I'm sorry.
Come on, Bray.
So as we were wrapping up, we were taking some pictures with Dr. Carter, and we were talking about running as meditation. We got into some other... we may have him back because we had some,
we're gonna have to, yeah.
Some other interesting conversations. One thing we got into, which is a question you always ask, is do you run with music?
That's right.
And he said always.
That's right. I was psyched.
And
by that,
so that was very interesting. And then we started talking about all the reasons we don't listen, or especially I don't.
Or what gets in the way of it.
What gets in the way of it. And I talked about technical issues and it sounds tinny and the crappy speakers, and you were talking about the nano and this and that. And he looked at both of us in his calm, clinical manner,
period,
and said, "It's amazing the two of you run at all. You're so picky."
Yeah.
So he assessed us pretty quickly.
He sort of nailed it
succinctly.
That was pretty quick. Yeah, I guess we are.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty good to look in the mirror sometimes.
Hey. This has been episode 67 of How Was Your Run Today with Peter Villa and Brian Gould, recorded at the WGBH studio at the Boston Public Library. Music by Jeff Cronenberg. Anna Brooks is our social media guru. Andrea Bonnie Gould is our artist in residence. Special thanks to Dr. Chris Carter.
Listen to us every week wherever you collect podcasts. Peter keeps his under his portable running couch.
I need that couch.
But whenever you visit that special podcast place, please give us a rating and a comment. Every single one of those makes a difference in how this little here show is ranked.
And we're seeing a difference, by the way. People are actually doing it on iTunes. Keep it up, everybody. It's working.
Thank you from the bottom of my podcast heart.
Join us every Saturday on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram with your Sat Stat Chats. Tell us where you ran, how the weather was, and include a sweet, sweet photo.
Fulfill all of your HWIRT shopping needs at our Redbubble store.
And if you love HWIRT, please share our posts on social media. It's free, and it's easier than attempting to win the Boston Marathon as a member of the Clyde Army.
Good luck with that, Peter.
I think he didn't say it was impossible, by the way. Just
he did kind of say, why don't you try
it? Yeah, he said, yeah, make that a goal.
That's going to push you.
Yeah, put that right in there.
We're going to have to talk with Chris Heisler about that as a goal, whether that makes sense.
I think actually winning the Boston Marathon might be my sub-goal. My goal is to finish. My sub-goal is to win it.
Okay. For everything else, go to our website and check out the Radio Public Player while you're there at hwirt.com.
Yeah, it does look really good there. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Peter.
Have a good run.
You too.
Right. And we really are. It's right there. I mean, it's unbelievable.
That doesn't bother you, seeing the finish line repeatedly like that?
Yeah, it actually is messing me up quite a bit.
No, come on. They haven't repainted it, so it's that not even a real finish line.
Some people are very superstitious. You know, they won't get to the finish line. They won't cross the finish line.
I had never even looked at it before.